Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble. Hey, I'm so glad that you've taken some time out of your busy schedule today to join me on the broadcast. Well, officially, summer arrived here in Florissant yesterday, the longest day of the year, 96 plus degrees. I was working. Part of my job is outside at the hospital. I felt the heat. But I love summer, and I am so pumped for this summer and all the programs I'll be doing, the books I'll be writing. And so it's one of my favorite seasons. And today, a really important program. You definitely want to stay alongside for an interview I'm going to have at 10 a.m., just in about 25 minutes or so. I'm going to have the lead strategist for ACT for America. His name is Scott Pressler. He's a human rights activist, lead strategist, a very, very serious man of God who's going to talk to us about Sharia law. Just a couple of weeks ago, we had the National March for Sharia all across our nation, and we're going to get into all the details of what that is, what that accomplished, what Sharia law really is, why is that a threat to our Constitution. We're going to talk all about that in just about 25 minutes. But in this first half of the segment, very important also, I'm going to take us into Turkey. It is a nation of refugees. A lot of my Iranian friends end up in Turkey on their way to freedom. But since Erdogan has become president a few years ago, and especially last year with the attempted military coup, things are getting very, very desperate there. There is a lot of persecution. A lot of Christians that are suffering. One of them, Pastor Andrew Brunson, who's been in jail there for a long time now, and we're working hard to get him home. This is a troubled spot now in the Middle East, and I want to take us into Turkey and talk to you about President Erdogan, what this man is doing with the people of his country, and what it means for the Middle East. But as I mentioned to you, Turkey is a haven for Iranian refugees on their way to freedom. And so what I want to do is I want to play for you this short story from CBN, the Christian Broadcasting Network, the story of Iranian refugees in Turkey. And they're going to come back and talk about some other issues concerning Turkey. Let's listen to this story right now on the cross in the desert.
Before escaping their home in the Islamic Republic of Iran, Reza was a successful civil engineer, and his wife Mariam had a good job as a translator, but something was missing in their lives.
Okay, where is God? Why we are here? And the more I asked these questions, but the less I could find the answers in the religion in which I grew up.
They told me when Mariam was hired to translate a Bible tract, Reza read it and wanted to know more about God and Christianity. Soon, he was attending an underground church. When Mariam saw the changes in her husband and in their marriage, she gave her life to Christ too. They had a new relationship with God, but their lives also took a dangerous turn.
The government, the system in there, they cannot tolerate your conversion.
One day on his way to work, Reza was kidnapped by the police and interrogated for 2 straight days. When he was released, he took his family to Turkey to seek asylum. But because refugees can't legally work in Turkey, the former engineer has to do menial jobs and get paid under the table to make ends meet.
It's hard as a mother to tell your kids no all the time because you can't afford to buy them things. Employers barely pay us because they know we are desperate. They treat us like slaves.
This family left everything they knew behind and came to a foreign land relying on God. We wanted to help them any way we could. We started with a trip to the grocery store. After loading up at the grocery store, we had one more big surprise for them. CBN paid their rent and utility bills for 3 months. Now they'll have a chance to get ahead.
Thanks, God.
Thank you so much for your help. We will never forget this. Even though we are far apart, we're not alone. In Christ, we are one big family.
It's a beautiful story. This is a family that found their hope and freedom in Jesus, leaving Islam and then traveling into Turkey because they knew, as Christians living in Iran, how desperate and very dangerous that would be for them. And so it was wonderful for CBN to financially support them. This is what I do here on the Cross in the Desert, is be a voice for refugees who are struggling, who are in Turkey, most of them, looking for a new homeland where they can have the freedom to worship and the freedom to live and act as they believe. And so please keep my Iranian refugees close to your heart and in your prayers. Well, but it's not such an easy ride for some Christians there that have people to help them. Pastor Andrew Brunson has had a ministry in Turkey for many, many years. And since the military coup, some false charges have been leveled against him. And now he has been in jail for a very long time. And I want you to hear his story and what you and I can do to try to get him home to his family again.
Mark, 6 months since an American pastor was placed in a Turkish jail without charge. Andrew Brunson was picked up by Turkish authorities as part of last year's crackdown after a failed military coup in that country. His family now fighting to free him. Chief Intelligence Correspondent Kathryn Herridge live on this story out of Washington. Good morning to you. What are the allegations first? Start there.
Well, thank you, Bill. According to Republican Senator James Lankford, who has been working quietly behind the scenes to secure his release, the Turkish authorities allege that Pastor Brunson helped Kurdish refugees. Turkey labels the Kurds an insurgent group. And the other allegation is that Pastor Brunson attended a conference that was sponsored by another enemy of the Turkish state. The senator told Fox the allegations are without merit and set a dangerous precedent.
It seemed very odd for them to be able to pick up a Turkish missionary that was there, an American citizen that's been serving for more than 20 years in Turkey and has been very engaged, very accepted by the culture, and then suddenly for him to be swept up and to be part of a terrorist investigation without any evidence. With just an accusation, and still to this day, 6 months later, no charges.
The State Department is also involved and sent Fox this comment that reads in part, "The Department of State takes seriously its obligation to assist U.S. citizens arrested abroad. When a U.S. citizen is detained overseas, we seek to visit as soon as possible and to provide appropriate consular services. but privacy considerations prevented anything further, Bill.
Well, what is the family telling you? I know you've been in touch with them. Catherine, what are you hearing?
Well, Pastor Brunson's daughter goes to school in North Carolina and told Fox via Skype that her father is being held in this Turkish prison, originally in solitary and now with seven other men in a small cell. Jacqueline Brunson is respectfully asking for help at the most senior levels of the U.S. government.
We really, really want to get this case, my father's case, to President Trump. We want to have a meeting with him. We really feel that it would be helpful to have the president's support and have him personally arguing for my father's case to get him back home safely to his family.
Fox News has asked the Turkish embassy here in Washington, D.C. for comment. Of course, we'll bring that to you as soon as we get an update.
Wow,
though.
Okay, urgency here. Mm-hmm. Catherine, thank you. Catherine Harridge in Washington.
Yes, later on my page, there will be a petition from the American Center of Law and Justice you can sign and urge President Trump to do all that he can to reunite this pastor with his family. It's a very difficult situation there in Turkey. And as I mentioned to you before, President Erdogan, the Turkish president, which is our ally, is leaning more to Islamic fundamentalism in this country. And I want you to listen to this next report. This was the referendum vote back in April, which was a vote by the people, supposedly, which would give more presidential powers to Erdogan. But it has very serious ramifications for the freedom in this country, for those Iranian refugees, for those Christians, for other citizens that are working and living in Turkey. Because given more power, the structure, the constitution, the culture of Turkey is under assault by Islamic fundamentalism. I want you to hear this special story right now on the cross in the desert.
The U.S. is encouraging all sides in Turkey to work together following a hugely controversial vote over presidential powers there. Correspondent Rich Edson is watching the story tonight from the State Department.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan once said, "Democracy is like a streetcar. When you come to your stop, you get off." President Erdogan has consolidated power, jailed political opponents and journalists, and now he celebrates a national referendum granting the Turkish president, his office, more authority.
The crusader mentality attacked us abroad. Inside, their lackeys attacked us. We did not succumb. As a nation, we stood strong.
Turkey says unofficial results give those supporting the referendum a narrow victory, phasing in changes to Turkey's constitution, allowing the president to directly appoint top officials. It abolishes the prime minister's position, grants the president a greater role in Turkey's justice system. The president gets 2 5-year terms, though a loophole allows for a third.
It will be a vast consolidation of power into the hands of just one man. What we have now is a Turkey that's becoming Eastern-oriented, a Turkey that's becoming Islamist, that is upending its secular tradition, and is really bringing an end to the last 100 years of the Republic of Turkey. And that matters because Turkey has been the bulwark of Europe.
The Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe monitored the election. It says the vote was generally well-administered. However, one-sided state media coverage favored the campaign, pushing to give Erdogan more power.
Fundamental freedom essential to a generally democratic process were curtailed. The dismissal of detention of thousands of citizens negatively affected the political environment.
Turkey is a longtime U.S. ally, from the Cold War to fighting ISIS. In response to the referendum, the State Department acknowledged the concerns the international monitors raised, adding, quote, "We look to the government of Turkey to protect the fundamental rights and freedom of all its citizens, regardless of their vote on April 16th, as guaranteed by the Turkish Constitution and in accordance with Turkey's international commitments." The statement adds the U.S. is committed to its relationship with Turkey and its democratic development.
President Erdogan's response to complaints about the referendum, he calls them politically motivated and says those authors should know their place. Erdogan spoke with President Trump today. That, according to international reports, we are still waiting for confirmation and details from the White House. Brett? Rich Edson, live at the State Department. Rich, thank you.
In that particular referendum vote, as we listened to on that report, there were hundreds of cases of ballot box stuffing. And it really was a scandalous time. The Council of Election changed the rules of counting over an hour into the counting, which really leads many to believe that this was a fraudulent election. It's very serious for Christians and Jews there. If the referendum stands, Erdogan will have executive, judicial, and legislative powers, and Erdemir predicts conditions for Christians who've already fallen prey to crackdowns and persecution will continue to worsen. During his victory speech, Erdogan invoked religious incitement, accusing the West of starting a crusade against Islam. So he's again using this kind of belligerent clash of, quote, Islam versus Christianity. It's the battle of the cross versus the crescent rhetoric. And you can imagine if you're a member of Turkey's Jewish or Christian communities, you will feel very threatened because you're a citizen and technically on paper you have the same rights as Turkey's majority Muslim population, but you have a president which continues to single you out. And so this is a bad situation for all involved there. And you think about what's going on, and you think about what's happening in the constitution, in the culture, in the society there in Turkey. It has a lot of warning signals that freedom, really, freedom of journalism, freedom of speech, freedom of religion is really under attack and under assault, especially now with the success of this referendum vote back in April. Well, as I study the Bible and look at the future and I think of the Middle East, it's a meltdown coming there. It is a sitting powder keg. And did you know in Ezekiel 38, the Bible talks about a coalition of nations that in the very end of times will attack Israel. And one of those nations that's part of that coalition is the nation of Turkey. I want you to hear a couple of sound bites now about Turkey in Bible prophecy. This is from the John Ankerberg Show, and it is a very insightful topic that you want to listen to. What does the Bible say about Turkey in the past and in the future? Let's listen right now on the cross in the desert.
Now let's look at what's happening politically in Turkey. Tayyip Erdogan, he is the prime minister of Turkey. His political career started in Istanbul when he became the mayor of Istanbul. He was too radical. And at that time, the military was the custodian of keeping this, they have a very interesting phrase, a secular Islamic nation together. I don't know what secular Islam is, but anyway, whatever it is, 98% of all the Turkish people are of the Muslim faith, quote, to whatever extent. But they threw him out of office as the mayor of Istanbul. Well, when he got thrown out, he started to put another political party together. They came to power. They had more members of the parliament in Turkey than any other. They had the constitution changed, and Tayyip Erdogan became the prime minister of the Turkish people. Now, Tayyip Erdogan is a radical Islamist. You can look at his history. You can watch what he's doing in the country. You can watch the way they try to destroy the Kurds who live in the eastern part of the state of Turkey. And time again, we can see what he is doing. He has the major water source in the entire Middle East. In fact, not too long ago, he turned off that water source. It's called the Euphrates River. 21 dams on that Euphrates River in Turkey. And at that time, Hafez al-Assad was the president of Syria. Saddam Hussein was the president of Iraq. And they were livid when he did that. And he said, fellas, we don't have any oil. You have the oil. We have the water. Let's make a deal. And so he's in a position of power. And he's been reaching out, trying to become the pan-Islamic leader. In other words, the leader of the Islamic world. You have to remember, Islam stopped its westward movement in Turkey. And he wants to renew that movement, have Islam spread throughout Europe, throughout the world, and set up a caliphate. They want to see that happen. Caliphate is the Arabic word for an international world dominion or kingdom. Well, I've got to tell you, Tayyip Erdogan is moving quickly to make that happen. And his people don't like it, and they're starting to go to the streets, and many of them are being killed, sometimes unmercilessly, by the military of the leaders of modern-day Turkey. Turkey is on the verge of becoming a major player in the Middle East, but they are included in the scriptures. Ezekiel chapter 38, verse 2, Meshech, Tubal, Gomer, Togarmah, modern-day Turkey, a key player in the end-time scenario that happens after the rapture of the church.
And that is prophecy expert Jimmy D. Young. Jimmy D. Young, he lives right there in Jerusalem, and he has amazing insight into the prophetic end-time events. I'm very careful of the people that I, you know, advertise for, that I promote. He is very balanced. He's very insightful. And most of everything he said is quite accurate. And I really look up to him as a good teacher of Bible prophecy. There are many today that don't have the credibility, that don't have the insight. And you have to be very, very careful of listening to some that teach. But he has been proven time and time again as a regular guest on the Jan Ankerberg program to have not only a great knowledge, but he has a front row seat. He lives right there in Jerusalem. And so he is surrounded by the Jewish people, the Arab people, and he talks and interacts with them. He's a good friend to all of them there, as well as Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. And so you get a sense of what's happening in Turkey right now. It's very prophetic. And Erdogan kind of sees himself evolving leader of the Islamic regime, if you will, there in the Middle East. And there is much we can understand from the scriptures about what's going to happen in the future. Let's now take a closer look at Ezekiel 38. This is a very primary passage yet to be fulfilled in the future. Let's take a look at how Turkey will play a significant role in the future of Bible prophecy. Let's listen.
Now, you say, why are we talking about this in terms of biblical prophecy? Because not only does the world and military leaders think that that's an important spot, going into the Middle East and then going into Europe and natural resources and funding terrorism and all of that, it's amazing to me that the Bible says in Ezekiel 38, it talks about this country four times as being one of the key nations that's part of the Ezekiel 38 coalition of nations that comes against Israel. I want you to take our folks through this important prophetic passage and show where Turkey's at.
Ezekiel 38 is a passage. There are other passages, Psalm 83, Daniel 11, verses 40 to 45, but Ezekiel 38 is the main passage on the Gog-Magog battle that's going to take place in these first 6 months of the tribulation period, which is key because all the players have to be ready to do that. When you look at Ezekiel chapter 38 and verse 2, you see the first nation that's mentioned, Magog. We've already talked about that on a previous program, which is modern-day Russia. Gog is the leader, and should all of this be fulfilled today, Gog would be Vladimir Putin. He's ready in Russia to accomplish what needs to be done. But his partners are going to include it in chapter 38, verse 2. It mentions Meshech and Tubal. And then in verse 6, it mentions Gomer and Togarmah. These are the four sections of what is modern-day Turkey. And some 4,500 years ago, when nations were established, that's where those four sons of Japheth, the grandsons of Noah, the brothers of Magog, went to live. Meshech, Tubal, Gomer, and Togarmah. When their brother Magog went north of the Caspian and Black Sea, they went south of the Caspian and Black Sea. They established the nation of Turkey. And then when you come to chapter 5, Persia, modern-day Iran, Ethiopia, modern-day Ethiopia, Somalia, Sudan, Put, or Libya. And so this is a part, a major part of the coalition that will form in the last days to try to go into Jerusalem and wipe out the Jewish state.
Well, that's a lot of insight there. I know that's a lot for you to have to think about. But what I like so much about Jimmy DeYoung and his insights is what he's saying about the Bible is very, very important. The Bible is a trustworthy Word of God. We can see in the past, when you look through the prophetic scriptures, the Bible gives us in detail the coming Messiah. And there are glimpses through the prophets like Isaiah that the Messiah would be born in Bethlehem, And then you look through the prophetic scriptures in Isaiah that he would have a ministry of miracles in Isaiah. You look in the Psalms that he was pierced through for our transgressions. Not a bone of his was broken. And then we see these little glimpses into the future. What the Bible does very, very uniquely is it shows that the author of the Bible, God himself, knows the future. He knows the end from the beginning. And when you look through the prophetic scriptures, you see the coming Messiah, his birth, his ministry, his death and resurrection, all are foreshadowed through the prophets and points specifically to Jesus himself. And this is what makes the Bible unique. It's not a hit and miss guess. This is God specifically saying to us that he knows the end from the beginning, that he is bringing his son, the Messiah, into the world. And it's very, very unique. There is no book like the Bible in the entire world. And this is a book of absolute accurate prophecy. And you can depend on what it says because we see how God specifically enumerated the coming Messiah. He was very clear about this. It says in Isaiah 46, "Remember this and stand firm, for I am God and there is no other. I am God and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times things not yet done, saying, my counsel shall stand, and I will accomplish all my purpose." Notice that he says, declaring the end from the beginning. God is very clear that he is the Lord of the universe, the very existence of us as human beings, and nations is all in his perfect, sovereign, holy plan, in that he knows the end already before it happens, the end from the beginning. And so God proves that and demonstrates that. Here in Isaiah, he is chastening his own people for going after soothsayers and astrologists and false prophecy, saying, why are you trusting in these soothsayers? Why are you trusting in horoscopes? If you know when I'm talking about the horoscope, why are you trusting in the magical false arts of Babylon? I am the God of Israel. I know the future, not because I know it, but because I plan it. And so when you run to these mediums and soothsayers and astrologers, you're consulting idols that are worthless. Come to me, Israel. I am your God. I know the future because I plan it in very precise detail. And so God had to confront his own people time and time again about going into idolatry, chasing after false gods and mediums and wizards. He says, look, and this is why he says it here in Isaiah 46, I am God and there is no other. Just to let you know, Israel, these are false gods. These are soothsayers. These are mediums. These are spiritists. And they will lead you astray, but I will not. I declare the end from the beginning, and my counsel shall stand, and I will accomplish all my purpose, God says very, very clearly. Listen to me, you stubborn of heart, with you who are far from righteousness. I bring near my righteousness, it is not far off, and my salvation will not delay. I will put salvation in Zion for Israel, my glory. And so you see here, the purpose of the prophetic scriptures is to show us that what God says is trustworthy, that he is a God that knows the end from the beginning, and what he says that comes to pass will happen. And so when you look at the Bible and you see how he precisely predicted the coming of his son, the Messiah, then you can have confidence that what he says in the future will happen precisely as he says it. And so when we look today at the prophetic scriptures and we see Ezekiel 38 and we learn about Turkey, you can think very, very clearly what God says is going to happen. And it's frightening. We need to pray for the Christians in Turkey that are suffering for their faith. Right now, I have a very special guest from Act for America. This is Mr. Scott Pressler, and I want to welcome you, Scott, to the Cross in the Desert. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you doing, Brandy?
Doing really good. Scott, thank you so much for taking time out of your vacation to join me on my program, The Cross in the Desert. And I mentioned to our listening audience that you are the lead strategist for Act for America. And what I want to do, I want to educate our people today specifically about your role as lead strategist.
Sure.
What is Act for America? Explain to our audience what it is you do and what is Act for America.
Sure. So Act for America is a national security organization that helps to pass legislation across the country. And it was founded by Brigitte Gabriel. Many of you might know her, but not Act for America. So Brigitte is actually our founder, and she founded Act for America after the September 11th attack. That really was her wake-up call. And so since Act for America, we've passed free speech legislation. We've passed American laws for American courts to make sure that our Constitution and only our Constitution are used in our courtrooms. And we have helped to protect women and young girls everywhere from passing anti-female genital mutilation laws. So this really is an organization that is protecting our Constitution and actually fighting for human rights in our country.
National security is a huge issue, Scott. Our current president ran on this platform for securing our borders. I'm looking now at the website of Act for America. I love the way this is displayed, confronting terrorism, preserving the Constitution, securing the border. These are issues, as we see the terrorist attacks happening in Europe and here in the United States, this is a very serious issue for us as Americans. What I want to do, since you've talked a little bit about Act for America, I want to talk about a couple of weeks, a very important nationwide rally, the protest March Against Sharia. Tell us a little bit about that, how that is so important, and tell us a little bit about what Sharia law is and what it means for us.
Sure. So just to give you a little bit of background, I got the idea for the march because my friend Tommy English in the UK, he said he was going to have a Gays Against Sharia UK march. And to anyone who does not know anything about Sharia law, you are not going to find something that is more anti-women, anti-gay, anti-children than Sharia. And so regardless of how you feel about, you know, homosexuals, the fact of the matter is that in our country, I have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And so therefore, people need to respect my right to life, and I'm going to respect theirs and their freedom of religion, etc. So just to clear that up, Sharia law is misogynistic, Sharia law is homophobic, Sharia law is anti everything that Western values stand for. If you care about women and protecting children, and if you don't believe that women should be subjugated and have to be submissive to men, then you are anti-Sharia law. So anyway, Tommy was doing this march in the UK, and I thought, wait a second. If he's doing a march, what is going to stop us in America from doing the same thing? Because at the end of the day, we don't want America to turn into Europe. Look at everything that's happening in Europe. We don't want attack after attack after London, after Manchester, after Paris, after Brussels. We don't want to become Europe, and we are not going to run, hide, and tell. So, again, this is my warning to the American people. Do not give up your Second Amendment rights. And I'll leave it at that. So I came up with the idea. Yes, sir. I came up with the idea.
You go right in, Scott.
And I told Brigitte, our founder, about it. And Ms. Gabriel said she was on board. She said, we want to put the full of Act for America, our national organization, that at the time was 500,000 members, and we have grown to 750,000 members in just a few months. And she said she wanted to put the full weight behind it. So we were able to organize a nationwide rally in 22 states, in 29 cities, all voluntary. Everything was voluntary. This was done only by a couple people, myself included, behind this. And we gained not only nationwide exposure, but international. And here's the coolest part. This is the coolest part. We were able to educate people on Sharia. And we looked at the Google results. And the Google results showed hundreds of thousands of people within the week and the 2 days of the rally had Googled Sharia. And up to that point, only a couple thousand were Googling Sharia a day. We made an international difference educating people on what Sharia law is.
This is very important, Scott, because there are other people involved with speaking out, and that would be Robert Spencer, Pamela Geller, and others that are speaking out against this. For the average person that has a Muslim as their next-door neighbor that are very peaceful, very kind, they're not terrorist-minded or anything, a person may say, well, where is the evidence that there is radical Muslims trying to change our Constitution by adopting Sharia law? What evidence do you have of that here in the United States that we should become concerned?
Sure. Well, I point to three cases in particular, and these were three women who we were marching for in our march against Sharia. You have Jessica, who was murdered by her parents in Michigan because she would not wear her headscarf. You have Aisha, who was decapitated by her husband because she filed for divorce in New York City, New York, in our soil. And then you have Palestina. Palestina was murdered in Missouri by her parents, her folks, because she was becoming too westernized. So the fact of the matter is, this is not something that's happening overseas. This is not something that's happening in Iraq or just Afghanistan or Iran. This is something that's happening on our soil, in our country, where women are being killed because they are not following religious practices, and where we have 500,000 girls, for example, who are at risk for or who have undergone female genital mutilation in the United States of America. So people say to me, like you just proposed, Randy, Scott, you know, there's no worry about this. You know, Sharia is never going to come to America. The fact of the matter is it's already here. And look at what just happened yesterday. We cannot go a week without there being a terrorist attack. You had a Canadian man who legally entered the United States through New York, Amor Fatoui, who traveled to Michigan, went over to Bishop Airport in Flint, and stabbed an officer in the neck, yelling, Allahu Akbar. And yet the media, I even looked at CNN's page for a second, and CNN said that Amor Fatoui shouted something in Arabic. They didn't even have the gall, the chutzpah, to say that he said Allahu Akbar until everybody started making fun of him for it. So the fact of the matter is we need you guys to join Act for America so we can teach you and educate you on these facts. We need you to become like sponges, information, and then teach others. You are going to become the person that learns and then teaches others, and that's how we're going to fight for America and make sure that we never become Europe.
You mentioned Europe. This is a very important case. When you look at Europe, the Sharia courts that are in Europe, like, for instance, France and the UK, they are entrenched there. The Muslims are becoming the majority in these countries. And that's one of the stages of jihad that a writer, prolific writer and a person who speaks out like David Wood, chronicles these stages of what we call jihad. So it's happening in Europe, and we can see what's happening there. And you mentioned the cases of women here that have been honor killed. Honor killed is coming to our shores. It's here already. And then Robert Spencer with Jihad Watch a few years ago did a survey among those in mosques. 80% of them preferred Sharia law over our own constitution. So we have a serious situation here that's going on, Scott, and education is very important to the core of this. Now, I want to bring us to a point about what happened a couple of weeks ago. A lot of the response was different groups claiming that you're hateful to Muslims, you hate Muslims, Islamophobia, all of these different accusations which are supposed to silence what you do. But they're not dealing with the core problem. Tell us, based on what I just said, how this march was received, what were the circumstances, and what were the results of what you did?
Sure. Well, here's the most ironic part. So left-leaning organizations were definitely against what we were doing. But let's look at track record for a second. So the left likes to say that they are for women, right? The left likes to say that they're for the gay community. The left likes to say that they're for human rights. Meanwhile, here we have Act for America, who is actually championing human rights and trying to protect young girls from female genital mutilation. I'm going to say that again. And to anyone who does not know, this is just a tiny bit graphic, but under Sharia law, circumcision is obligatory, and that is the removal of the clitoris. So I'm sorry if that is ruining anyone's breakfast, but this is serious stuff, and it needs to be talked about. So here we are, an organization that is marching against clitorectomies and trying to protect young women and girls everywhere. And we have left-leaning organizations who are marching against us, calling us bigoted, hateful, homophobic, misogynist. You know, the list goes on and on. That's what they do. Meanwhile, a gay man was leading the national march to help protect women and young girls everywhere. So this was very political stunt from the left, but this did not go unnoticed. This did not go unnoticed by the American people, because you had everybody under the sun coming out to our marches against Sharia. We had Muslims speaking at our events, and we had Muslims organizing our events, for example, in Atlanta, Georgia. We had apostates like Mark Laurie, a Christian, who actually does his ministries in Farsi and English to help spread the word. He's an apostate, which under Sharia means death. So he was very brave in speaking out. We had Miriam Ibrahim, who herself was locked up, imprisoned in jail with her 8-month-year-old son while she gave birth to a child shackled in prison, sentenced to death. We had Dr. Mohammed Hamzafor, who is the leader and founder of the Iranian American Patriots, who came down to Virginia Beach, Virginia, with a busload of Iranians who were supporting the president's policy. So you had Christians, Muslims, Jews, gays, women. You had everybody under the sun at our marches against Sharia across the country, and then you have the left demonizing us. So you know what? But we're not going to let their so-called blasphemy laws affect us. They did the same thing to the president. And what I mean by blasphemy laws, for anyone who does not know, under Sharia law, they actually do have blasphemy laws, where if you speak out or criticize Islam, you can be punished. And what do you think the word Islamophobia seeks to do? Islamophobia, sexism, misogyny, you know, all the words that the left uses, those are subtle blasphemy laws as a tool to try to silence and intimidate us. And I want to be very clear that we are not going to be silenced, that we are not going to be intimidated, that we are going to be fearless, and that we are going to continue to speak out no matter what, because we care about women. We care that young girls are not mutilated. We care that girls are not killed by their parents for honor violence. We care that gays are not pushed off of buildings for their sexuality. We care about preserving our Constitution and our Western way of life here in America, and we are not going to become Europe.
This is really great, because you're educating, you're out there, you're speaking out, you're mobilizing people together, you're caring for our country. But Scott, I want to take us back to January, right after Trump's inauguration. The next day, they had this women's rally across the nation, quote unquote, women for their rights, protesting against their so-called denial of human rights here. And one of the principal organizers was Linda Sarsour, who is very leftist, yep, who is very Palestinian, very anti-Jew. And what was so surprising, Scott, here are these women, the champion for women's rights, Madonna, all the rest, marching in lockstep behind a woman who is wanting to transform our nation into Sharia law. Tell us a little bit about Linda Sarsour.
Gosh, where do I even get started? You're talking about the woman who said that Muhammad was a women's rights activist. Give me a break. Linda Sarsour is not a champion for women or for human rights. If you believe in Sharia law, you cannot be for women. I will say that again. You cannot be pro-women's rights and also for Sharia, and that means you, Linda Sarsour. And that is why the Women's Rights March, for all intents and purposes, was so laughable, because here you are, who not only have Linda Sarsour, but what was her name? Asmia. There was this other woman, Asmia, who was actually a convicted terrorist who was a leader within the Women's Rights March, and she was actually deported. She was deported, a convicted terrorist helping to lead the Women's Rights March in January. So they really know how to pick them there at the Women's Rights March. But no, it's laughable for the left to pick up this virtue signaling, oh, look at me, I'm here to talk about gays and women, meanwhile they're pro-Sharia. So again, you cannot be for women's rights or for gay rights or for human rights and also be for Sharia, point blank, period.
Exactly. And the thing that was so frightening about this march back in January, I even saw photographs, Scott, of women taking the American flag and putting it in the shape of a headscarf like a hijab over their heads. And I'm saying to myself, how great the darkness and the deception. And Linda Sarsour is very smart. She's using this leftist march to promote Sharia law. She's hijacking it. And so this, yep, again, should be a red flag about what real fanatical Muslims want to do with our nation, with our country. Now, this was a march a couple of weeks ago. You had some very important people that marched with you and good results.
Yes.
What are you planning for in the future? This can't stop. This can be only the beginning of what we need to do to stop this movement and to protect our country. So what is on board in the future now?
Well, I want to make two important points. You know, as I said earlier, Brigitte Gabriel, our founder, her wake-up call was 9/11. My wake-up call was when a radical Islamic terrorist stormed a gay nightclub and murdered 49 Americans. My wake-up call when I said enough is enough, right? And look at the successes of the marches. The three most successful marches were San Bernardino, New York City, and Orlando, Florida. What does that tell you?
Uh-huh.
That tells you that the people who have suffered and who understand that terrorism is here on our shores, they get it. They've woken up. I've woken up, and that means that we must, not should, we must educate other people, because I am sick and tired of waking up every single morning and seeing new bloodshed. I am sick and tired of waking up to death every time I turn on my Twitter. I am just tired. I am tired of seeing good people die because of our inability to secure the border, to have an extreme vetting policy, and a temporary pause to protect the American people from radical Islamic terror. I'm tired of it. So that's why every single person that's listening, I'm asking every single person to sign up with us. Join actsforamerica.org today. Become a member. And don't just do that. They'll know about us. Because truly, we are the only grassroots organization that is putting forth legislation. We are passing laws. And in fact, Governor Greg Abbott of Texas just passed American Laws for American Courts in the beautiful Lone Star State of Texas. So shout out to Governor Abbott for that. So the fact of the matter is, we are the only grassroots organization passing legislation. We're fighting for national security. We're fighting for young girls everywhere. So you need to join us and educate others.
Absolutely. Now, under the prior administration, Scott, President Obama refused to use the term radical Islam. How important is this current administration with President Trump, who is very much involved with securing our borders? How important is having now Act for America mobilizing people under the Trump administration? It's a big difference, isn't it?
Oh, it's critical. It is. We are thankful to finally have a president who understands. I mean, think of it this way. I want you to think about something. President Obama invited the Muslim Brotherhood to the White House. The Muslim Brotherhood is a terrorist organization, a front group that donates money to terrorist groups like Hamas. That is the difference between the previous administration and this administration. This administration is trying to secure the border, put forth national security and temporary pauses to protect us, whereas the previous, like I just said, invited literally a terrorist group to the White House. So it is critical that we mobilize and organize, and it's also critical that we vote. I'm not going to tell you how to vote, but I'm asking you to vote based on national security. about your values on national security.
Very good. Excellent. What I like so much about Act for America is they're involved in passing legislation to secure our borders, to stop the progress of Sharia law. There has been several states that have also signed up to not allow Sharia law in their constitution, in their courts, in their judicial systems. And so I see a lot of fruit. I see a lot of good things coming from your organization. Now, to the average person that's listening this morning, Scott, they want to get involved. They want to be educated, they want to be involved. What do they do?
Well, we need you to first sign up, actforamerica.org, and I want to give you two very important statistics. Please open up your ears if you haven't listened to anything so far. I want you to please remember these two statistics. Legislators, you know when you call Congress, right, and you're calling that 202 number in Washington, D.C., did you know that for every one phone call you make, just one phone call, is worth 1,000 constituent voices, because they receive so few phone calls that one phone call to a legislator is worth 1,000 voices. So to every person that's listening, and you included, Randy, I want you guys to know that you matter. You make a difference. You matter. Number two, did you know that for a legislator, whether it's in Congress or in the Senate or in the state houses, it only takes 40 phone calls on an issue to make that pertinent to the legislator, because 40 phone calls, do the math, equals 40,000 constituent voices. So if you, your ma, your dad, your family, and your friends make 40 phone calls to a legislator and say, hey, I want American laws for American courts passed in Illinois or Pennsylvania or et cetera, you can make a huge difference, not only in your state, but in the United States of America. 40 phone calls can make such a powerful difference. And the sad part is people don't even know it. So that's why I'm thankful to go on your show, Randy, today and tell people this information, because they don't know. You control the power. These people in Washington, in Austin, and all over the country, we don't work for them. They work for us. And I want you to remember that. Uh-huh. You control the cards. You control the power. Make those phone calls. Write letters to the editor. Post on social media. Send them mail. You do not let a day go by that our legislators don't hear from us, because your voice does matter. Your vote does matter.
It comes right back down to we the people, and what I like about what you just shared with me is our voice does matter. Act for America empowers the common, ordinary, everyday individual to get involved, to mobilize, and to preserve our country's freedoms. But it's going to be up to us, Scott, as with everything. If we stay silent, Sharia law becomes reality, and we become like Europe, and that is the biggest fear for me, too.
And I want you to think of something, too. Silence is violence, literally. If we are silent, we are tacitly approving of everything that's going on. We're saying, oh, it's okay that these girls are being female genitally mutilated. It's okay that this guy just stabbed somebody in the neck. Oh, you know, that's just part and parcel of living in a big country. Well, I have a message for Sadiq Khan. Terrorism is not normal, and terrorism is not part and parcel of living in a big city. And again, we are not going to let America become Europe. We are cut from a different cloth. We are fighters. So to anybody out there who is of the same volition as we are, if you are a fighter, if you are strong, if you care about your country, if you care about preserving our Western values, our Constitution, and our way of life, then you must join Act for America and become a part of the movement. Again, we just hit 750,000 members, people just like you that care about our country. We need more patriots. We need more red, white, and blue Americans to come out and join us today.
Well, you are very convincing, Scott, very passionate, and what you say is absolutely true. And I think that anyone that's listening to this broadcast today will want to go to this website, actforamerica.org. Is that correct?
Yes, sir, actforamerica.org.
And I really want to thank you for bringing your passion. I thank you for waking up. I thank you for your patriotism, for loving this country and caring about it to become a voice. I want to thank you for being a guest today on the Cross for the the Cross in the Desert and sharing with us your passion, which should become our passion if we care about the freedoms of our country.
Definitely. I mean, this is life or death, guys. Honestly, this is life or death. That's it.
Thank you once again, Scott Pressler, lead strategist for Act for America. I want to thank you for spending some time and educating us this morning. God bless you, Scott.
Thank you. Thank you so much, everybody, and have a great week.
Thank you, Scott. This has been a very important broadcast today. Scott Pressler is a man of action. He's a man motivated by his country and his love for his country, and he's part of an organization that is making a huge difference in our country, and that comes down to you and me becoming involved. And what Scott said about the phone numbers is so very true. These are people that work for us. We hired them through voting, if you know what I mean. They are working for us. We, the people, decide the direction of this country. God has given us that respect and authority and power, and it's in our voice and it's in our hands. And so this morning, please don't just chalk this up as a nice interview, an informative interview. Please become involved. And Act for America has demonstrated their love and passion for our country. And so there is nothing more important than securing our freedoms. And so once again, I want to say thank you so much, Scott, for being a guest on the program, for educating us. It's time to pass the torch. Get involved, actforamerica.org. Sign up today and become one who stands for his or her country. We have a very, very special, wonderful musical guest in this last half an hour. And I'm talking to you about a band you probably have heard a lot about in the past 40 years. I'm talking about U2. They are embarking on the Joshua Tree World Tour. The Joshua Tree was a very important album for U2 back in 1987. It has incredible hit songs like I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For and songs like that. And they are embarking on the 30th anniversary of the album, The Joshua Tree. I want to tell you a little bit about U2. They are an amazing band. You know, they started in 1976 when Larry Mullen penned a Musicians Wanted ad to the notice board at Dublin's Temple Mount School. Drummer seeks musicians to form band. So on Saturday the 25th of September 1976, recalls Larry, this odd group of people convened in my kitchen in Arcane, and that's where it started. Adam Clayton had discovered rock and roll as a 13-year-old, buying his first acoustic guitar and then talking his parents into buying him a bass guitar. It just sounded good to me. Deep and fat and satisfying, Adam Clayton recalls. From the very beginning, U2 were marked out by their passion. A band before we could play was how Bono put it in early interviews. The Edge, which is the guitarist, remembers reading UK music papers, NEM, NME, and Sounds every week, and then hearing about this wild kid called Paul Hewson. The four teenagers, who initially called themselves Feedback, rehearsed in Larry Dublin's kitchen, Bono on vocals, The Edge on guitar, Adam Clayton and Larry making up the rhythm section of bass and drums, inspired by punk but insulated from the standoffish cool by the Irish Sea. Feedback had become the hype, and then U2, and were soon building a local reputation based on the passion of their performance as well. The rest, as we say, is history. What we're going to do this morning on the Cross in the Desert and the last segment is to feature the incredible music of U2, because you won't want to miss what they have to say in these songs. They are provocative. They are well arranged. They have a message. And this morning, we're going to begin with a classic, Pride. In the name of love, as we feature the incredible music of U2 on the soundcheck of The Cross in the Desert. Let's listen. classic music from The Edge. I call him one of my favorite guitar players. Love his style. This is U2, called Pride in the Name of Love. Well, I hope you're going to be geared up in attending the Joshua Tree Tour, which is going to hit here in St. Louis on September 16th. Still some good tickets available, and no matter what the price, it's worth seeing this Irish rock band who has influenced our culture. Bono is a dedicated Christian, and he really loves the art of taking his beliefs and painting a tapestry in his music, and he's all about justice, about bringing a relief to the hurting, oppressed people and the various different causes. In fact, The Edge has a cause to replace all of the musicians who lost their guitars, their instruments, when Katrina hit New Orleans in 2005. He's part of a charity. He has a charity that is seeking to rebuild those musicians who lost their equipment, their drums, their guitars, in the 2005 Katrina hurricane that hit New Orleans. And I think that this is a wonderful cause he's involved in. So the band U2 is for justice and for the oppressed people, and they do a lot of hard work in all that they do. Here's a song from Achtung, 1991. You will know this when you hear it. It has that real unmistakable riff. Here is Mysterious Ways by U2 on The Cross in the Desert.
Still up your room, you've been living.
the incredible music of U2. We are celebrating their Joshua Tree tour this morning on the Cross in the Desert. I want to tell you a little bit about this next song, which is the first track from Joshua Tree. It's always good to have a little background on their songs. This is a song called The Streets Have No Names, Where the Streets Have No Names. Back in 1985, Bono visited Ethiopia after performing at Live Aid, and many people assumed this song was about that trip, since the streets really don't have names, just numbers there. Well, actually, the song you're about to hear is about Ireland. In Ireland, and in Northern Ireland, the many cities are divided between rich, poor, Catholic, Protestant. By knowing which street a person lives on, you can tell their religion, their wealth, and their beliefs. It's where the streets have no names, thus this song. Now, this was the first track on Joshua Tree, which of course became the fastest-selling LP in both the U.S. and U.K. The song itself was very difficult to produce. It absorbed 40% of the band's time on this epic production. It was really difficult to mix, and they did this song, I guess, several times, and it was really one of the hardest songs on the CD, as you're going to hear. But at any rate, more important than what I have to say about the history, let's listen to the title track, if you will, or the first song on Joshua Tree, a very prolific song, Where the Streets Have No Name. This is U2.
Thank you.
You're listening to the incredible music, incredible in so many levels, of U2, Where the Streets Have No Name from Joshua Tree. This final song in our tribute to U2 and the Joshua Tree Tour is one of my favorites. I'm sure it has to rise to the level as one of your favorites. And, of course, I'm speaking about I Still Haven't Found What I'm Searching For. What makes this song so unique and timeless? It's not only Bono's excellent vocals, Adam Clayton's chilled out bass, and the Edge's Astro Guitar licks, but there's something much more deeper going on in this song. The song touches on a truth that is embedded in all people. It's a song about a deep sense of longing and desire for something that this present world cannot fully satisfy. I have kissed honey lips, felt the healing in her fingertips. It burned like fire. It was burning inside of her. I have spoke with the tongue of angels. I have held the hand of the devil. What is this song getting at? But I still haven't found what I'm looking for. It's written in the style of a gospel lament, which, if you think about it, is rooted in the Psalms, the Lamentations of Jeremiah, and it's like an African-American spiritual. What is Bono lamenting? Well, he's lamenting that no matter what he tries or what he does, ultimate satisfaction isn't found in this world. His satisfaction must come from somewhere else. He was made for something else, for somewhere else, or perhaps for someone else. He is a pilgrim and a sojourner on this earth, just a passing through. This longing is deeply rooted in the writings of C.S. Lewis, who talked about this longing, this joy he felt at times. And it is a deep spiritual longing. One of my favorite songs, you're about to hear it right now on The Cross in the Desert as we finish out our tribute to U2 and the Joshua Tree Tour. Here is I Still Haven't Found What I'm Looking For. Let's listen.
I have gone
The incredible music of U2 from Joshua Tree, one of the best songs on that CD. Obviously, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. Wrapping up our tribute to U2 this morning on the Cross in the Desert to their Joshua Tree tour, coming to a city near you very soon. I want to reflect on that song. It has a lot of meaning, a lot of deep meaning. It's a song with a lament. I still haven't found what I'm looking for. And so the question to you this morning is, are you in that same situation where you can say with Bono and you too, you know what, I still haven't found what I'm looking for? Is there a longing in your spirit, in your heart, for something more? You know, the psalmist says in Psalm 63, O God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My flesh faints for you in a dry and weary land where there is no water. The psalmist is saying, I can't find satisfaction in this world. My soul longs for your presence. My flesh, my whole body is craving what you have, because what you have, God, is the treasure that I'm looking for. So many people are looking for satisfaction in themselves. They're looking for it in their job, in their calling, in their career. Whether you're a tennis player, a government executive, congressman, whoever you are, satisfaction is not found in the things that you do or who you are. Because with time, those satisfactions wane, and you're left feeling empty, and your soul is thirsting for something more. And like Bono, you can say, I still haven't found what I'm looking for. I thought it was in this job. I thought it was in this calling. I thought it was in this career. But it's emptiness. It's vain. Why am I not fulfilled? What is missing? What is lacking? C.S. Lewis talked an awful lot about this. The prolific writer of the children, or the Chronicles of Narnia series, the books series for children and adults, I would say also. And in many of his writings, he talked about this longing in his heart and soul. Lewis became an atheist after he came back from the First World War. He'd seen so much evil and suffering in the world. But his soul and his heart couldn't justify so many things in his life. He didn't understand why he could say something was evil, because if something was good, and how can he say there's something evil or good if he's an atheist? He had no standard for his lament. But that longing in his soul kept after him. I still haven't found what I'm looking for. What will satisfy you? Is it your social status? Is it your marriage partner? Is it your job? What brings ultimate satisfaction? Jesus says, come to me, you who are weary and carry heavy burdens, and I will give you rest. Jesus says, when you come to me, the ultimate longing of your heart will be satisfied. That's amazing. You see, because Jesus is not just an ordinary person on the block. He is the Son of God. He has come to bring us life. He has come to bring us hope and healing and satisfaction. I am the bread of life, Jesus says. If you hunger and thirst for me, you will be fulfilled. You will find in me that which your soul has been longing for. And so while we can say on this planet, I haven't found what I'm looking for, when we come to Christ, everything we've been looking for is found, and we are satisfied. I hope you've enjoyed the broadcast today. Especially want to thank my good friend Scott Pressler from Act for America for educating us and calling us to action against the dangers of Sharia law, and that what is happening to our country today. ActForAmerica.org. Want to thank the YouTube people. Incredible music. Definitely check out their Joshua Tree tour as it comes to a city near you. This is Randy Noble wishing you a fantastic weekend, and I will see you again on the Cross in the Desert on Monday. God bless you. Have a great weekend.
Oh, glory, glory.